Hello and welcome back to Cover to Cover. Today I'm talking to a colleague from Shanghai about the 12th century poet Li Qingzhao. Hi Lin Yan, I'm here in our studio in Porto. How are things in Shanghai?
Hi Dan, thank you for the invitation and such a pleasure to be on Cover to Cover. Everything's fine here, busy as usual.
So, today we're talking about Li Qingzhao, a Chinese woman poet who lived during the Song Dynasty almost 1,000 years ago. You know, it feels remarkable to me to know so much about someone who is so far away from us in time.
Well, from a Chinese perspective, this is not really surprising. Li Qingzhao occupies a very prominent position in the long list of great Chinese poets, which stretches back hundreds of years.
She was a prolific writer.
Yes, and a lot of her work has been preserved. She's also a candid writer, who sometimes uses family life as a source of inspiration. But she had a strong interest in what was happening in the country generally. She was also highly educated. We know lots of tasty little biographical details about her from her poems. For example, we know that she liked to joke with her maid, to play memory games with her husband, to burn camphor incense in incense holder in the shape of lime. We even know that her bamboo mat was as smooth as jade, and that in the heat of the summer, she would sleep under a very fine gauze tent.
What kind of education did she receive?
The best kind. She was born into a liberal, scholarly family with the traditional reverence for learning. She wasn't stuck in a schooling system designed for taking exams. She was free to read and learn and be stimulated by the people around her.
You know, I imagine her swanning through a house stocked to the rafters with books, calligraphy on the walls, lively discussions around the dinner table, and of course, a garden with fruit trees and flowers. When she was born, China under the Song was stable and prosperous, right?
Yes. By then, the Song Dynasty had experienced more than 120 years of peace, and the economy had prospered as a result. Irrigation was widespread, mining was quite advanced. They'd had paper money for 60 years, called jiaozi. Textiles, silk weaving, flax weaving were all booming, and the five famous kilns of the Song Dynasty produced superb porcelain. The glaze of the porcelain was often likened to jade and emerald.
You know, in England, at the end of the 11th century, the two most populous cities were London and Winchester, but neither of them had a population of over 10,000. And yet, the cities of Kaifeng and Hangzhou already had 1 million inhabitants each, and Kaifeng had theatres that could hold audiences of several thousand people.
Yep. At that time, Kaifeng, the capital of North Song, was the biggest city in the world. It was a transport hub, especially for water traffic. You can think of the city as a spider at the center of a web made of rivers and canals. Goods came to the capital city from all directions. There were shops selling everything from eagles and pearls to crabs and clams. Workshops produced arrows, equestrian armor, wine, medicine, you name it. Restaurants were often three-story high, lit up at night with candlelight. And the theaters you mentioned were not highbrow places for the elite. They were noisy, crowded places with storytellers, musicians, dancers, puppet show performers, and acrobats. Most shops would open around 4 in the morning and not close until midnight, with many restaurants open all night. Historians say that Kaifeng was even more prosperous than Chang'an during the Tang Dynasty.
Can we say that Li Qingzhao lived in a kind of golden age?
Well, the tail end of one, because the political situation was darkening.
Well, let's stay with the happy times for a while. Let's listen to the famous short poem about the crabapple tree. But before we do, I would just like to set it up a little for our non-Chinese listeners, many of whom will be discovering this poem for the first time. Now, in Chinese, the poem is a miracle of concision. It's only 33 characters in total. Lin Yan, I know you'll say more about the poem in a minute, but the first thing to point out that this is the voice of a younger woman, right? Maybe late 20s or early 30s. And the elements that Li Qingzhao stitches together for this poem, well, we have a storm, or to be more accurate, a storm buffets the woman's house overnight. And for whatever reason, she reaches for a bottle of alcohol and drinks glass after glass.
You mean cup after cup?
Oops.
In the Song Dynasty, people didn't have bottles of wine like today, and they didn't pour wine into glasses. They would have stored wine or Guanyin spirits in earthen jar probably, and then poured some into a small ceramic wine pot and drunk from small delicate cups. And the alcohol should have been served by a maid.
Yes, you're right. Of course, of course. Sorry for the historical inaccuracy. So the maid serves her, and then maybe she reaches for the pot of wine herself, and she drinks cup after cup as the rain drums on the roof and the wind sighs in the branches outside. Outside the house is the garden, and in that garden, amongst other shrubs and flowers, there happens to be a crabapple tree. And let's say immediately that in Chinese classic poems, the crabapple tree with its beautiful pink flowers is often used as a symbol for female beauty. The crabapple tree, like the house, is exposed to the storm and also, of course, to the seasons. And the seasons are changing. The pink flowers are starting to disappear. The green leaves are taking over. You know, personally, I very much get the feeling that the poet is alone, but I know you have a different view on that. And then, of course, there's also a maid who makes an appearance. How old is the maid? Maybe 18? Who knows? Anyway, one of the maid's duties is to come into the lady of the house in the morning and roll up the bamboo shades to let light into the room. Now, in my mind, this maid is not only younger than the poet, she's also more down to earth, more practically minded, we might say a little unimaginative. She probably has a bunch of tasks to get through by lunchtime, and as a result, perhaps, she has no real interest in the garden or in what a storm may portend. Anyway, that's enough blah blah from me. Let's listen to the poem, first in Chinese and then in English.
Zuo ye yu shu feng zhou, nong shui bu xiao cán jiu, shi wen juan lian ren, que dao hai tang yi jiu, zhi fou, zhi fou. 应是绿肥红瘦。Through
the night, it buffeted with wind and rain. I drank too much, fell into an uneasy sleep. When the morning maid entered to roll up the blinds, I asked, "What happened to the crabapple tree?" She replied offhand, "It's just as before." "No, No, I retorted, silly. Don't you see? The green leaves are taking over. The pink flowers are thinning out.
Lin Yan, simple question. Why has this poem endured so well?
Well, it's considered to be one of the best of her earlier poems, the ones written before she and her husband went south. But maybe another reason why it was so famous today is because a popular and well-written web novel borrows the last line from the poem as its title. It was then adapted into a hit TV drama, and the song written for the TV drama also became a hit. Most of the lyrics were lifted directly from the poem, so this poem is truly inspirational. It still inspires interesting and diverse work 1,000 years later.
Okay. You were saying earlier when we were chatting that in this poem, Li Qingzhao shows off her talent for wordplay. Can you give us an example?
Put it this way. The words Li Qingzhao chooses are neat, fresh, beautiful. They feel just right. The last four words are Lü Fei Hong Shou, used to describe the image of fewer flowers and more leaves. Fei means fat and Shou means lean. To use these words to describe the increase of leaves and decrease flowers is fresh and unexpected. Very few characters are used, but they summon up strong images and also carry symbolic meanings and allusions to ancient stories. As you mentioned, the crabapple tree in this poem, with its pink flowers, is often taken as a symbol of feminine beauty. Actually, these old poems just drip with layer upon layer of meaning and metaphor. So inevitably, much is lost when these poems are translated into English.
Absolutely. You know, frankly, translating them is an impossible task. The Chinese is so concentrated and also, as you point out, it's so rich in allusions. The translations we have used in these podcasts are versions that I've put together after asking you and your colleagues and various other Chinese friends a whole salvo of questions. But no doubt, they still reflect my prejudices to some extent. Anyway, how do you react to this poem?
For me, the poem describes a person who retains the same kind of open-eyed wonder for nature that a child has. Someone who notices nature, who keeps her eye out for flowers, leaves, all the small details and changes of nature. This person is also someone who does not want to let spring go, who wants to keep it a little longer. This sentiment often appears in Chinese classic poetry. Spring and the flowers that come with the season are often likened to youth and beauty, especially the vulnerable or fragile kind. Here this minute and gone the next. Poets don't want this beauty to go. They want it to last a little longer. For example, the eastern wind, which blows more often in summer, is an impressive power in some poems. The wind is somehow evil because when the wind prevails, the flowers and the fragile beauty will be gone. So this poem by Li Qingzhao laments the brevity of spring. There are similar laments about crabapple flowers dwindling away in a spring storm in a poem by the Tang poet Tang Wu. Han's poem also has night rain, disappearing crabapple blossoms, and rolled up bamboo curtains. So the ingredients of Li's poem are not new. What's new are the words she uses, the way she uses them.
You also described this poem to me as naughty and lighthearted. In what way is it naughty?
On second thoughts, naughty might not be the right word. Maybe carefree, romantic? It's a domestic scene. She's the lady of the house. She wakes up in the morning after a windy, rainy night. She's still suffering from a hangover after the previous night's heavy drinking. As we said, rice wine or spirits. And her first concern
is not to oversee the running of daily affairs, or to pay respect to her elder in-laws, or even have breakfast, as any regular lady of the house living in that time is supposed to do. Instead, she impatiently asks the maid what has happened to the crabapple tree in the courtyard. The maid replies in an offhand manner that the trees are just the same, and Li Qingzhao retorts, "It's not possible, not possible. There must be fewer flowers, more leaves on the branches." This is surprising. Like us today, she's a grown-up. Any grown-ups are busy people, weighed down with work and responsibilities. Few of us would worry about crabapple trees outside after a rainy night. We are more likely to worry about breakfast, our commute, or the 11 a.m. meeting with the boss. Just imagine you were drunk last night, and this morning you woke with a hangover, and the only thing on your mind is the flowers out in the garden. This sheer impracticalness is extremely romantic in a way, very attractive too, even to a contemporary reader.
Yes, as you could tell from my little introduction and also from the way that Tina read the poem, I see this poem a little differently.
How do you see it?
Well, I like the interchange between the lady and the maid. I like the sense of play and banter and leisure, the sense that this lady is enjoying her house, her garden, her wine cellar. But I also feel a kind of foreboding tugging away at the poet here. I feel that she's alone at home. Maybe she had had an argument or a misunderstanding with her husband before he left. Maybe the power games being played out in the capital or something else were on her mind. Perhaps she was feeling a little insecure, mulling over something that had been said or not said, and she opened a bottle, a pot, and the wind whistled and howled in the branches. The rain thrummed on the roof and her sleep was troubled. Then the maid enters, ratata, young, a little offhand, a little careless. This maid has no conception of major change, but it seems to me in the poet's ear, there are still the sounds of the storm and the sense that beauty and female beauty, the beautiful pink flowers of the crabapple, will be eaten by the fat green leaves. She remonstrates with the maid, "Ignorant girl, don't you understand? Beauty is ephemeral. Storms can spring up at any moment. It's as certain as the change of season."
In a sense, you are right. Like I said earlier, this poem is clearly in the vein of the many poems in Chinese classic poetry that regret the short-lived spring, which is a symbol of youth and beauty. But on the details in the poem here, you'll see her husband might have been away and she might have been drinking alone, feeling insecure and burning over a quarrel or misunderstanding of some kind. To me, this is highly unlikely. Of course, I can't be sure about what happened at that time or whether she drank with her husband or alone. But if the poem was written after quarrel or something, it wouldn't be in this light-hearted vein and the language wouldn't be this crisp and fresh.
Well, I guess one of the glories of literature is that it allows different readers to react in different ways. Lin Yan, I'm sure you don't mind me reacting to this poem with my bizarre Western mindset.
Of course not.
You know, for me, great writers like Li Qingzhao or Shakespeare are capable of being read in quite different ways. As readers, we all bring our own experiences, our own sensitivity. And personally, I love to see great works of literature interpreted in different ways and indeed by people from different countries. You know, take Shakespeare's great tragedies, Hamlet and King Lear. For me, the best films about these two plays were the films made by the Russian director, Grigor Kuznetsov. But anyway, to return to our extraordinary lady poet, I suppose my reaction to the poem, which has influenced the way Tina read it to some extent, may be a little disorientating for you.
Well, to be honest, I don't really recognize this Li Qingzhao. That last line, 绿肥红瘦, as I said earlier, is one of her immortal lines. It's original, and it's a line that people say, well, that is Li Qingzhao. So, in my imagination, she should be rather proud of herself, almost smug, for coming up with this fresh and unexpected line. I don't think she would be this sad. You know, Tina's voice even wavers a little at the end. But I don't want to confound the satisfaction that a poet takes in their craft with the emotion of the poem. What I mean is, the poem is special, not because of the sentiment, which is not new, but because of the words, which are. As I see it, it's almost the competition between her and the great poets that went before her. We all feel for the fleeting spring, but who did a better job of rendering it? But put that aside, it's interesting to contrast Helen's reading of the poem in Chinese with Tina's English version. I guess it's not always easy for you to find the poet that you appreciate in Helen's version, and we definitely don't see Li Qingzhao in your version. But the clash of ideas is interesting itself. As you said to me while we were working on this, Li is big enough for both interpretations. Also, another important point, this contrast makes for a good podcast.
Exactly. As the French say, vive la différence. Liniane, it's been a real pleasure talking to you, and please don't go away. I have lots more questions to ask you and two more poems to talk about. And thanks also to our wonderful interpreters of the poems, Tina Georgieva from Canada and Helen Hu from China.
Yes, you know, Helen is from Shandong, the same province where Li Qingzhao was born and grew up.
太好了,谢谢林燕,听众朋友们,请收听我们的下一个播客。